Welcome to another edition of the 40 Minutes of Tell podcast. It's a post-Portland, post-Phil Knight Invitational edition, and a little bit later than I'd wanted to record it, than I'd kind of promised or indicated I was going to. My computer, my MacBook didn't fare too well on Sunday. My work issue computer, and not that there's anything wrong at all with what I'm provided. I think it was more of just kind of a freak set of circumstances. But yeah, my MacBook didn't have a great Sunday. Probably the UConn men's basketball team is the only thing in Portland that had a worse day than it did. Obviously, Arkansas kills UConn 102-67. That finishes up what was kind of a weird weekend. And we're going to talk all about it. I'm going to talk all about it. I'm actually doing this by myself. I took a ton of great Twitter questions from you guys on Sunday. Wasn't able to get to it then, but wanted to go through each of these and kind of talk about the weekend, what to look for going forward, where they're at 5-1, where they're at through six games, and also kind of what the landscape of the SEC is, because obviously it's still early. We're not even to December yet, but I think that we can start to see some teams emerging, and I'm going to talk about that. So I'm going to go ahead and dive right in, and obviously I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you probably watched all three games and are pretty well versed in what happened, but just going to recap the weekend real quick before I jump into the questions. Arkansas wins the first game. It was a weird weekend, right? Because it's just a huge swings in momentum. So they win the first game 92-83 over Oklahoma. That's a win that I think is going to look really good later on in the year, because I think OU will be a tournament team. I think Trey Young elevates them to that level and gets them back in that conversation after they had a down year last year. He's so good, man. He plays like Steph Curry. Obviously, no one is Steph Curry, the greatest shooter ever, but just the way that he comes off screens, he can pull up from anywhere inside 30 feet. He's so flashy with the handle and can get the ball to his teammates and with passes that you're like, wow, how did he see that? His vision's great. I don't know that he'll be a one-and-done guy just because doesn't have great size. I don't know how athletic he is. You know, another thing that separates Steph from, you know, all guys of like that, like a Jimmer for dead, is Steph's got like some of the best balance ever. Trey Young will play in the NBA. I don't know if it'll be after this year, but he is going to be just an incredible college guard. So for Arkansas to hold him, in relatively speaking, to 28 points, I thought they did a pretty good job. The game was really, really fun, really fast paced. Going to talk about Arkansas's pace a little bit, going to write about it this week as well. But Arkansas beats OU 92-83. The senior guards really played well. Macon had 27. Jalen Barford had 19. Anton Beard had 13. Then obviously they run into the road bump against North Carolina, get off to a great start, and I thought really played with a lot of force early on in the game. Obviously that didn't last. Offensively, that first half was pretty terrible. Really, really got stuck in the mud, slowed down. Everything was a slog. There wasn't a lot of movement. And obviously foul trouble was an issue. You had Gafford only play three first half minutes. Barford didn't play the last like seven, and they got outscored by eight in that final 7-33, I think it was. And you go from being down three and kind of in the game you're in the game, and then you're down 11 at halftime, and they just never were able to come back. Darryl Macon goes down, and I think that was kind of more of the thing. You know, they get beat by 19, but the uncertainty of losing potentially a guy who's one of your best two players, one of your best three players, that's about the worst outcome you could have had this weekend. But obviously he ended up being okay. He played Sunday in what was just about as good a game as Arkansas could have asked for and about as awful a showing as UConn could have provided, I thought. 102-67, Arkansas shot 60%, UConn shot less than 40. Arkansas shot 11 of 19 from three. Jalen Barford was great, hit four threes, a career high, 24 points, three short of his career high in as far as points go, and really played like Damian Lillard. I'm going to go ahead and take credit for getting him as a Damian Lillard shout-out because I asked the question post-game, and I kind of had an idea that Daryl was going to have something to say about that. Jalen's got a really good personality, but he doesn't always show it in that setting. But Daryl is incredibly outgoing, and I kind of figured if I asked the question, we were going to get a disbelieving Daryl Macon, and we did, and that led to Jalen getting a shout out from Damian Lillard, one of the best point guards in the NBA. Obviously, he plays for the Blazers, which is where this tournament was in the Moda Center, or what really should be the Rose Garden. If you talk to the locals there, it's the Rose Garden, and got a chance to get out and explore Portland. Man, what a great city! It was awesome. Maybe not as great as Bill Walton made it out to be. He made it seem like the Garden of Eden or some just mystical place. But it's really cool. A lot of stuff around town to go, you know, just little hole-in-the-wall places that you can go duck into. It's beautiful. It does rain a lot. I think it rained a little bit every day. But I was in love. It was my first time there, and I absolutely had a great time and enjoyed myself thoroughly. So that was one of the questions, though, that I got on Twitter was, I think, at Russell Schaap, is Bill Walton still talking? Probably. Yeah, probably is. He was walking around all weekend constantly talking to everybody. About the only time that he shut up, I think, was whenever Arkansas had its post-game press conference against UConn. He still walks with a limp. Obviously, he's had foot problems. So he got in there like right before it started, and I think he just wanted to sit down for a second, and so he kind of got stuck there for about 10 minutes while I did my best Bob Holt impression and asked a million questions. Shout out to Bob. But that was about the only time that Bill Walton ever showed up. I feel like he was always in the back whenever he wasn't doing games, kind of studying and going over teams. From what I understand, he wasn't very familiar with Arkansas coming into this tournament. And when I say not very familiar, I mean he didn't know who Mike Anderson really was. And so you take that and then you listen to the broadcast. And I went back and watched the first two games and about half of the UConn game so far. And he talks about him like he's just a great coach. And just over and over, he's very effusive with his praise. So I thought that was kind of funny. But I like Bill Walton. I hate Dick Vitale. I'm not a big fan of his. He just doesn't do it for me. Bill Walton, you know, obviously he rambles, he gets off topic, and you're wondering what kind of what an acid trip in the 70s is doing to his brain here in the 2017. You never know what's firing off inside of his mind and prompting whatever it is. But he's entertaining to me, and if I'm watching a basketball game, I'm trying to really be entertained. I feel like I can pay attention to what's going on the court pretty well. And a lot of color commentary is just so, just all so generic. So anything that's kind of breaking from the norm, I enjoy. Like him, I like Jeff Van Gundy just ranting and whining about stuff. So I didn't have a problem with Bill. I get, though, why if you're trying to listen to someone talk about your favorite team, I understand why that would be frustrating. Anyway, so now that I've said my piece about Bill Walton, after about a million people tweeted at me whining about him, I'm going to go ahead and jump into some of these questions, and there were a lot of them. I may not get to spend a whole bunch of time on some of them, but I think I'm going to be able to get to most of them, or I'm going to try to. Starting out, just with how they played Sunday, just dominating UConn, being up 42 at one point. At Sam_Melson23, Sam Melson, guy that is a huge Arkansas fan, so shout out to Sam. He asks, is UConn this bad or Arkansas this good? I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, UConn, I don't think they're that bad. They beat Oregon in the first game, and they're down five. Kind of had a similar game against Michigan State as Arkansas did with North Carolina, down five midway through the second half, and then it got away from them, and I think they lost by 20. But they're not a great team. They were 16-17 last year. They got some decent guard play. Jalen Adams is good. I like him. But they take a lot of tough shots. They take a lot of really tough shots, and at least they did Sunday, and I think that really was kind of the crux of the game. Their tough shots didn't fall and allowed Arkansas to play in transition, and that was something Arkansas didn't do against North Carolina, and I think they really emphasized it on Sunday, and they got out, they ran, they got into early offense, and I'm kind of worried about Kevin Ollie, former Thunder Kevin Ollie, almost was the coach. It was like him or Billy Donovan. Those were the two big names whenever they fired Scott Brooks, and I'm worried about him. You know, they're trying to run all this stuff that they're running a bunch of flex stuff, doing some spread pick and roll. Aside from that national championship season, and really that, I mean, not that you can take anything away from a national title, but that team was like an 8 or 9 seed. They're a low seeded team and went on a run to make it. So obviously great run, and you can't take that away, and that's huge. But I don't think he's been as successful as a whole, maybe, or as consistently as a lot of people thought that they would be. I think they're picked fifth in their conference, behind like Wichita State and I'm forgetting who else, but they're picked fifth in the conference before the year. I don't think they're a great team. I do think anytime you are up 42 on a team and a program of that caliber, that's a heck of a performance. So while UConn may not be great, that was a great performance by Arkansas. You shoot 60% from the floor. That's a heck of a game, and that's what Arkansas did. And really to end the weekend on that note, and Mike Anderson said it after the game, you know, they went 2-1. They would have liked to go 3-0, but to win that the third game and to do it in the way they did was huge because, you know, more than winning two games, the way they played and the two wins is kind of what you take away and what you're encouraged by. And, you know, there's a lot of room to improve and grow, and I'm going to talk about that. But to play as well as they did on Sunday, especially with not knowing if you were going to get Macon or how much you were going to get from him, I think they knew they were going to probably have him. That was an impressive performance. So moving on, at AR Razorback News says there seems to even be some significant national momentum around the idea the SEC will get 6 to 7 teams in the NCAA tournament. Given Arkansas showing in the PK80, how can they be excluded from the top 25 if that opinion is a consensus? Got a few questions about this. At Nicholas Luttrell, I don't know if I'm saying that right, at Nick Luddy, asked, are we a top 25 team? No, they're not right now. I think they are, they're 33 in the AP if you go and expand the receiving votes, and 30 in the coaches poll. So not quite there. I had to take a drink of water talking for 15 minutes uninterrupted. Is not quite as easy as you might think. So they're not there right now. There are four SEC teams ranked, three of them in the top 10. So Florida is 6, Kentucky is 7, Texas A&M is number 9, and Alabama is number 24. So Arkansas is right behind Bama, and you know, really close, really close to being in that top 25, but they're not there. And I think that's kind of a result of there's some positive momentum, and the way they've played in a lot of games has been the reason behind that. But regardless of if the game against North Carolina was closer, they lost by 19, and then North Carolina turns around and just gets smacked by Michigan State. They shot terrible, and it was like the worst offensive performance in school history. There were a ton of NBA scouts in Portland, and the consensus was that North Carolina doesn't have really any elite NBA talent on their team. So I think that kind of, you know, that was Arkansas's biggest test, and you know, they didn't win. They didn't play that well, especially in the first half. And so I think that's why you see why they're not ranked. They're gonna have a chance to move up. Sam Melson asked again, Hogs versus Houston, who you got? Also, Houston has beat nobody good. I mean, that's gonna be the thing, right? So if they go to Houston on Saturday, if they beat a Houston team that is you know, they're okay, they haven't really played anyone. They're 4-1. They lost to Drexel by 4, and they beat Wake Forest by 5. Those are their two, I guess, big games. They are the number 61 team in KenPom. They've got a good offense. They score really well, or they have so far to this point this year. Rob Gray, I want to say. I don't have it in front of me. Rob Gray, 23.8 points. So another good guard that they're going to be going up against. I mean, if they win that game, I think that there is a good chance that they are ranked, or they'll be right on the cusp going into that next week, and then you really, like, they will have a chance to move into the top 20 really that next week. Colorado State Tuesday, December 5th at home, and then number 12 Minnesota on the 9th, that Saturday. That's going to be a huge game. Minnesota may be in the top 10 at that point. They've looked really good. Amir Coffey is good. Patino's really got it going there. I think that, I mean, that's going to be a huge game. That's the kind of game that I think you could see like 17,000-18,000 people show up and really pack Bud Walton, because Arkansas's going to have a ton of momentum at that point. It's a huge deal. It could be a matchup of ranked teams. You know, if they kill Houston this weekend, then, you know, they may be ranked. Especially in the coaches poll, they're 30 right now. So it's not inconceivable that they move up, a few other teams drop games. But they will definitely have their chance to be ranked with that Minnesota game. Win that, and there's no doubt they're ranked. They may be in the top 20, because they would be, you know, assuming that they win the two before, they would be, 7-1, 8-1 after that. So they're not ranked yet. I don't think that's anything to be upset about or freak out about. Obviously, they've played well. A lot of the preseason rankings are the result of where people thought you were before the year. And obviously, not a lot of people thought Arkansas was going to be a top 25 type team. So it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle early on. And that's just kind of a result, the reality of the situation that they're in. Craig Rush, Dell SPS Rush, says, was it just a bad day yesterday? He asked this on Sunday, so he's talking about the North Carolina game. Can this team compete with the elite programs? So, obviously, yeah. I mean, it was a terrible day. Their offense was so bad early on. And that's kind of concerning. North Carolina doesn't really have a ton of elite talent. I don't know if it was just the Daryl Macon talked about not treating this any different, but they did. I mean, they used this thing in all of their promos all off season, and you can say that, well, that's the marketing department, but the players are on there talking about how that game fueled their off season work and motivated them. And it was a huge game for the players. I mean, this was the team that knocked them out last year and went on to win the championship. And they said the right things, but you know it was a big game, so I don't know if maybe they're a little bit too amped up. But obviously, they played terrible in that first half. Jalen Barford was great, had 21. He was 9 of 17. But in the first half, Arkansas is playing with such great pace this year. That's been huge, I think. And that was one of my preseason predictions, was that they hadn't been in the top 50 the last 2 years in pace. So since they changed the shot clock from 35 to 30, Arkansas hadn't been in the top 50 in pace. I predicted that they would be this year, that they jump back up. Right now they're 19th in the country in pace, 44th in offensive pace, and 39th in defensive pace, which is a good sign potentially. Obviously some of that is whenever they do their man press and double the guy who gets the ball and bounce and give up 4-on-3 fast breaks. But they're also turning people over more than they had, in years past, and running off misses. And they didn't really run off misses because they had a hard time rebounding the ball against North Carolina. And just in their offense, in the half court, they really devolved into a lot of one-on-one. One of the things that I'm going to write about that I think kind of bothers me with this team sometimes is so much of what they do in the motion, in freelance, kind of the flow offense, if you want to call it that, is dependent on screening and cutting hard. So you set a hard screen, and a lot of times if you set a hard screen, you're going to free yourself up too. But you got to cut hard, you got to screen hard, and sometimes they go through the motions and just kind of set these weak screens and don't really cut with a lot of vigor. And I think they kind of ran into that, and so then they got into these late clock situations. I actually have it written down somewhere. I don't have it in front of me, but I think they had like 10 possessions in the first half where they got to the final maybe 10 seconds of the shot clock, and they were abysmal in those situations because they, you know, North Carolina is a good team, and they have a lot of length and were really we're really able to contest shots. And while Arkansas has been good in those situations because they have good senior guards, they just had a hard time getting clean looks and really, really just struggled to do. Okay, here it is. Less than 10 seconds. They had 9 possessions in the first half. They got to less than 10 on the shot clock. They were 2-for-8 with and scored 5 points, turned it over on another one. 7 possessions with less than 5. They're 2-for-6, 5 points. So just, you know, really, really inefficient offense. You're always not going to, most of the time, you're not going to score as efficiently if it's late in the clock. Arkansas has been incredible other than that game, other than that half, really, for the most part of the season. But their lack of movement in the half court, they're just so stagnant, and they didn't get any early offense. And Arkansas, a lot of what it does is predicated on getting out and running, pushing the pace. Good offenses do that. It's easier to score before the defense is set, and they just really did not do that in the first half and really kind of dug themselves a hole. Obviously, foul trouble was a huge issue because Gafford only played 3 minutes in the first half. Like I talked about earlier, Barford missed a lot of time. You know, I thought North Carolina physically whipped them, and Luke May was incredible. I mean, my goodness. Dustin Thomas, after this weekend, Synergy Sports tracks like everything, and I think Dustin Thomas, when he's been ISO'd on, was like giving up like 4 or 5 shooting. Luke May is responsible for some of that. They didn't play terrible defense against him for the most part. He got some open looks off of like pick and pop stuff or different things, but he knocked down everything, and then conversely turned around and didn't do anything against Michigan State in that game. But he had 28 on 11 of 16, had 16 rebounds, and Arkansas got out rebounded 46-30. Obviously, some of that's because Arkansas only shot 38%. But I thought they got physically kind of beat up in that game, and they really didn't impose their style of play. And obviously North Carolina had a lot to do with that, and that's, you know, basically Mike sums it up really well. They're not as good as North Carolina at this point in the season, but it's a long season, and a lot of things have the potential to change. I think you saw some good things happen. C.J. Jones getting some time with the Macon injury, and that was important for him and really got him going. And just for them to experience some adversity and come back and play as well as they did Sunday was big. Nathan Morris asked some really good questions. One of them was, Mike has a Thompson-Gafford situation to look at going forward. I love Thompson. He's a senior, play smart, and can pass. It's fun to watch, but we're way better with Gafford on the floor. He's a faster, better scorer, defender, and rebounder. How does that play out? So, good question. Really good question. Spencer Hillis asked, will they ever play together at the same time? David Dykes asked the same thing. They only played together on 5 trips up and down the court, so 5 offensive and defensive possessions in Portland, and they've only done so 35 total possessions all year, so that's about like a quarter of a game, maybe a little bit more, give or take, with how fast they're playing. You know, I love Trey Thompson. I think I've written that a million times. He does so, I maybe don't love him as much as Bill Walton does, but he does so much for this team. Whenever they give him the ball at the high post and essentially the other 4 players cut and screen for each other, they just are so hard to guard. Especially Macon and Barford are really good about using his dribble handoffs, or whether they rub off of his screens essentially at at the top of the key or the high post or in the slot, wherever it is, they're really, really good about using that to create separation and get off shots, and he's so valuable in that way. I think he's underrated as a rim protector. He's had some good rebounding games. I still think, you know, weight is an issue. Only had 2 rebounds in 26 minutes against North Carolina. That had to be better. But, you know, Gafford's got to be able to stay out of foul trouble. Gafford has been the better player so far to this point. Right now, through 6 games, they're about plus 8.6 with Trey on the court. That's their net rating. So per 100 possessions, they're 8.6 points better than opponents. 118 offensive rating. That's great. National average for any offense defense rating is 103.4. So 118.7 on offense. Gafford, not quite as good on offense, 112.7, but they are 79.9. That's their defensive rating with him on the court. And it's not just because of bad teams, because in Portland it was 76.7. Arkansas got outscored by 12. Their net rating was a minus 12 with Trey on the court in Portland. And it was plus like 34. Yeah, plus 35 with Daniel on the court. So, yeah, they clearly played a lot better with Gafford out there. The problem is Gafford is, you know, really limiting himself because of the foul issues. He picked up 4 at least in every game, fouled out of the North Carolina game. He's averaging 4.3 per year, and it kind of held him back. I mean, it did hold him back. He only played 14 minutes in the UConn game and only played 15 in the North Carolina game. So really it's on him. When he has been able to stay out of foul trouble, or relatively speaking, he's played more minutes. You know, he played against OU. He played, what, like 25, 26 minutes? Yeah, 25 minutes against OU, and Thompson played 15. So it's not like Mike has kept him on the bench when he's been able to play. He's put himself on the bench essentially because he's not been able to stay out of foul trouble. Some of those are, it's kind of interesting because, you know, he's picking up these cheap fouls. Mike talked about it the other day, 2 times where he's, you know, he's got to get stronger. He's going to get stronger, but it's kind of, you saw it creep up a few times over the weekend where he'd get a rebound and he'd get it ripped away from him. And he'd commit a foul trying to fight back 90 feet from the basket. And that's just something that he's going to have to grow out of. One, he's got to get stronger and be able to, box out and secure the rebound and get the ball to a guard. But two, he's got to be more disciplined and realize that that's not a foul that he needs to pick up, because he's that important to what they do defensively. You know, they're working with him on using verticality. I wrote about that maybe last week, and going straight up. You don't have to block everything. If someone's coming right at you, then maybe go vertical. You got a 7'2 wingspan. You're really athletic. Go straight up and see if you can avoid the foul. He's gotten some call on him anyway whenever he does that, which I think has frustrated him a little bit. He's still averaging a block and a half a game, but I think some of the foul troubles kind of started to take away his aggressiveness as a help side, as a weak side shot blocker. I've seen a couple plays where he's had the opportunity to maybe try and chase down and get someone from behind or come from the weak side and do it. And those are when you can really block shots and unload on people. And he's kind of shied away and just let the guy go because you could tell he didn't want to pick up a foul. Still, though, obviously they're playing great with him on the floor defensively, and he changes so much. They went on the run, both runs in the North Carolina game, a 9-0 run and then the 10-0 run that cut it to 6 with him on the court, also with them playing zone. And that's been, a good sort of change up. And if they're in a zone, that means he's protecting the basket, and he's just a difference maker. I think, you know, I really like Trey. He brings a lot to the table. He's a good, I think, backup big. I think that they're best served with like a 25 to 15 minute distribution at this point. Gafford 25, Trey 15. And whether they play them together, that's an interesting question too, because Adriel Bailey's playing great so far. Adriel Bailey's like sixth in the SEC in block percentage, so the percentage of shots that he blocks while he's on the court, like one in every 10 shots he's blocking. He's finishing really well, shooting about 70%, and if you take away the terrible jumpers that he's probably going to have to start turning down a little bit, he's like 78% at the rim. I don't have the number right in front of me, but he's played really well, and you know, I think he deserves more minutes than Dustin Thomas right now. Whether they end up, you know, Mike played Dustin 20 minutes a game, and kind of seemed to go to him in important situations. That'll be interesting to track. He likes his experienced guys. He likes his seniors. And I think Adrio, what he's done so far has made him more deserving of minutes than Dustin Thomas, but it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see whether Mike starts to slant more that way. But really, with those two right now, they're kind of taking up all the minutes at the four. And Dustin did play good. I don't want to make it seem like I'm trashing him. He got beat some one-on-one against North Carolina, but there were other games. The UConn game, he made some really nice rotations. Had some big offensive rebounds. Did a great job on the offensive glass. To me, he looked really indecisive and kind of was a contributor to their issues at times in the half court. He almost got a couple 5-second calls. He had a few bad turnovers. Just kind of the ball stuck in his hands a little bit. And he's got a good skill set as far as a passer and someone who can see the floor. But there were a couple times where I don't know. The ball stuck in his hands and kind of really gummed up what they were doing on offense. That's got to get better. Maybe it will as it continues to move forward. But with those two, I don't know how many minutes are honestly left over at the four for Trey and Gafford to play together. And I think kind of the thing that'll be interesting is, you know, it's not like either Adrio or Dustin can shoot that well. I kept hearing Dustin was going to shoot great coming into the year, and none of his shots really looked good the other day or over the weekend. Gafford can't really shoot that great at this point. I know he hit the big shot against OU, and that was huge for his confidence, you would think, going forward. But nobody stretches the floor really in those lineups, so that's kind of maybe an issue. It'll be interesting to see if Mike starts to go more toward Gafford Thompson. I kind of think he's shied away from it to this point. What is interesting is Gafford's passed the ball really, really well so far. I think I'm going to write about that a little bit. Out of double teams, OU doubled him, and he really handled it much better than I thought he would and made a lot of good passes. There are other plays where he's made some really nice reads and gotten the ball to cutters and done a good job of really being alert and attentive and being a willing passer. So that lineup, if they did play Thompson and Gafford together, it could be interesting. I think right now Mike loves to tinker and kind of explore what different lineups and combinations look like. I think Trey is much better than Dustin, so I think those are two of their three best bigs, talking about Thompson and Gafford. So maybe they start playing together more as we get deeper into the season. But right now, especially with Dustin just coming back, I think that they'll continue to kind of go with those four as a whole and split up Gafford and Thomas's minutes. Razorback Soft asked if Gafford can avoid foul trouble. Do you see him starting later in the year? I do, but he's going to have to avoid foul trouble, and that he hadn't gotten close to doing that really so far. So I don't know that it's going to happen anytime in the immediate future because – you know, you put him out there and he picks up two fouls before the 18-minute mark, and then you're like, well, this is really not ideal. Trey's got to play the last 18 minutes of the first half or you risk throwing Gafford out there to pick up his third, which he did against OU. So I said under on 15 starts for Trey Thompson this year. I think it's going to be close, actually. It's going to come down to whether Gafford can start to play a little bit smarter, and maybe start to get a few less whistles against him just as his reputation gets better. And that's, you know, a truth, maybe an unfortunate truth to some people, but that's kind of how it works. If you're a good player and referees know that, they're going to be a little bit more lenient towards you. Got a few questions about Khalil Garland and Orlando Cook. Mitchell Weber at MDW235 and Nicholas Latrell again asked about them both. Garland, from what I understand, is going to get – he's going to be tested again sometime in December, so coming up here pretty soon. He's on some new medication that they needed to give time to take effect before they test him again. Obviously, you hope he can come back. He would be a big part of what they do potentially, because as we saw with the Macon injury and as we've seen really all year, their guard depth isn't great. They're playing the three seniors big minutes, and I think that has to change. And so at the same time, he hasn't played 5-on-5 at all. He's going to be behind if he does come back. I lean toward he's probably not going to be able to play this season. Obviously, you want to see him do whatever's best for him. If he's healthy and can play, that's great. If not, then they're not going to jeopardize. He's not going to get cleared by a doctor, first off. But, you know, they're never going to put him in a position where they are knowingly jeopardizing anything. So, Orlando Cook, he's got a January 3rd court date. I kind of figured, and, you know, it may still happen, that they work something out outside of the courtroom so that he doesn't actually end up going and appearing to that, maybe like a plea deal or something like that. It hasn't happened so far. And if you're an Orlando Cook fan, I'm sorry. I just don't really see him fitting or really playing a big role on this team once he comes back. They have got two guys who I think are clearly ahead of him at the four. Adrio Bailey, without any question, is ahead of him at this point with what he's done so far. He's been been about as good as they could have hoped. And Dustin Thomas was ahead of him last year, and I think he'll continue to work his way back. I don't see him being a part of the rotation even when he gets back. Maybe if they struggle, he gets a chance, but he's got his work cut out for him. And I think the fact that he's still on the team and he's practicing means that they anticipate him being eligible to play. Whether he plays is a completely other, a whole nother deal. Sam Anderson at SammyA_4 said, how did you like what you saw from CJ the last game? Look sustainable? If so, does that mean more minutes for him and better overall for us as three senior guards playing a lot of minutes right now? Yeah, I mentioned that a second ago. They're playing a ton of minutes. So through the first six games, Jalen's averaging 30, Daryl's averaging 29.3, Anton 30.3. The only reason Daryl's not above the 30-minute average is because he got hurt and missed the final 14-15 against North Carolina. CJ was, 7 of 16, 7 of 17 from 3 the last two games of the PK-80. After going 2 of 10 the first two, I don't think he's going to be as bad as the 2 of 10, and I don't think he's going to be as, I don't think he's going to shoot 48% from three. I do think that can be a huge springboard for him because he's a confidence player. I think that was huge for him. The start of the season, he didn't shoot well, and that was big because it was just really his first big chance, and he wasn't really producing. So for him to have to play, to be thrust into the North Carolina game, and to, he went 4 of 10. It was kind of weird. I was talking to somebody within the program about this Sunday before they played UConn. He went 4 of 10. That's great. You shoot 40%. That's great. He missed, it seemed like, a lot of big shots, like something that would cut it to 7 or 6 or whatever, and he just couldn't get it to go. Then he hits the two late. I think two days in a row I tweeted that he wasn't shooting well, and he ended up turning around and knocking down a few, making me look stupid. But I've written about him a lot. I wrote a really long story about him before the season. I think he's a huge part of this team, and if they want to be as good as they think that they can be, he's got to be a significant player on this team. Played 26 minutes against North Carolina out of necessity. Played 21 against UConn. Scored a career-high 19 in that game. Really looked good. Got to the foul line six times after he'd only been once, I think, all year. That's really not his game. He hasn't. He's so athletic, but he hadn't found a way to really harness that and use it to, you know, I think the next step for him is to, he's got the one dribble pull up when guys run him off the line, but to be able to use that athleticism and take two more dribbles and get to the rim and, you know, ultimately to the foul line, because his shot's just so smooth. You know, there's no question. He's a pure shooter. Everything he shoots looks like it's going to go in. Even when he was 2 for 10, all of his shots are online, and when they leave his hand, they look good, and he just wasn't making them. He started to those last two games, and you know, I think that he's got to be somebody that they can rely on for 20 minutes a game. He's averaging 19 so far. He's got the ability to get hot and change the flow of games. They've got to have him and Darius Hall step up and give the three seniors some breaks. You know, it's a long season, and I get that these guys are only 20, 21 years old, but I think you saw a little bit of fatigue after the OU game the next day against North Carolina. Now, obviously, they're not going to be playing back-to-backs until you get to the SEC tournament. Even in the NCAA tournament, you get a day off. But cumulative wear and tear, I think, is a real thing, and you, especially when you're playing as fast as Arkansas does. 32 minutes for Arkansas isn't the same as 32 minutes for, you know, insert school that plays a slower pace here. So getting CJ, getting Hall, and getting Darius to contribute more and getting Mike to have more confidence in them to roll them out there, I think, is a huge thing. And, you know, I was kind of skeptical on how the three senior guard starting lineup would work. I kind of think Mike's going to stick with that for quite a while now. Now, watch now. He'll start CJ against Houston. But they've got to have two of those guys on the court at all times. And that was kind of the big deal against North Carolina. They weren't able to do that, and you saw them really suffer. Nathan Morris asked another one. So Thompson and Thomas really can't shoot or score. True. Hall and Bailey have struggled to make jump shots as well. That is also true. In the UNC game, a lack of shooter scores looked like a potential problem going forward. What are your thoughts? So, like I talked about earlier, the offense just really bogged down. They didn't get out, and they're basically attacking a set defense every time. And, you know, it's always going to be harder to score when you've got to go against that. Trey doesn't score. Trey Thompson doesn't need to score to be effective when he's out there. He does so many other things. So offensively, Trey not scoring is not a big deal to me. That's not his game. I kind of cringe, and I'm not saying that Nathan is doing this, but whenever people insinuate that he needs to post up more and he only took two shots, he's not doing. You don't really, unless he's wide open, if it's a layup or some sort of dump off, you want him orchestrating the offense out there, and these senior guards, like I talked about earlier, they're so good moving without the ball when he has it. At the high post, at the slot, you know, anywhere. They're cutting off of him and getting open looks as a result of kind of the chemistry that they've developed with him. You know, I think that, yeah, definitely a lack of shooters and scores is kind of an issue because you've only got the three senior guards that are really able to create their own shots. So Gafford's been better than I thought, a lot better than I thought as far as scoring on his own, whether it be post-ups or, you know, he's caught the ball at the top of the key a couple times or at the nail and taken a few, you know, really he only needs one dribble to get to the rim. He's so long. And he's been maybe better than I thought in that regard, but he's still not someone that I think you can throw the ball to. He's not Bobby Portis where you're just throwing the ball clear out and say, okay, go get us a bucket, big guy. You know, I think he's still a little bit out of control at times. And they only have those three that they really have to set the table for everyone else. You know, Trey helps and pass and gets the ball to people, but he's not a scoring threat. So those three are the only guys that are someone who can create their own shot, can create a shot for other people and can, and, you know, do it both at a reasonably high level. So they're not going to get a lot of just one-on-one scoring out of their front court. I don't think they necessarily need it. Darius Hall is an interesting player to me because I think, you know, he kind of makes sense at the four. And I kind of think that's a little bit of what Nathan's asking. Got, you know, front court scoring. I think he's kind of an interesting guy at the four. And he's been, I mean, man, he's been really aggressive offensively. He's got like the fourth most turnovers on the team as a bit guy who doesn't really have the ball in his hands a lot. So can't really dribble. But he is aggressive. I do like that he's so aggressive. I kind of thought they would play him in some small lineups. That may not happen as much just based on their depth in the backcourt. They, you know, they're going to live and die by how well the three seniors play. If you expect Daryl and Jalen to play well every game, and then one of Anton and CJ is shooting well, you know, you're probably gonna have a good chance of scoring enough points to win on any given night, because Gafford's going to get his points in the flow of the game. And really the other guys on the team are opportunistic scorers. But yeah, it's definitely a top heavy roster from a scoring standpoint. And I think that's something that'll be interesting moving on to next year is how much are those young guards that are going to be coming in going to be able to create for themselves? Because there are, you know, they're going to be losing their three best shot creators, and really four if you throw Trey into the mix. So, wrapping up here, sort of winding down. BigTog 19741 on the message board asked, "How is Daryl Macon's ankle?" I think he's fine. I think it was more of a, you know, it might be a light week in practice for him. He obviously rolled it. I think it was more of a pain tolerance thing Sunday. Mike and Jalen kind of smiled at each other whenever he said he was in pain. I asked him about how it felt, and he was like, "Oh, I'm in pain right now, but I guess I was hyped during the game." I think that it was a pain tolerance thing, and he was able to deal with it. That's kind of what people indicated to me. You know, he may take a few, he may not fully participate in practice this week, or maybe he gets more treatment. I'm sure he will on it. I don't think it'll be something that really affects him. Baytog also asked, is Gafford getting more NBA attention than he was a week ago? Well, people are definitely aware of him. So Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz are two guys from that used to run Draft Express, which was by far the best NBA draft website out there. Ton of great scouting content. They really did a great job. They are now working for ESPN, which kind of sucks because you essentially take away, while I don't think Chad Ford was on their level, I do think that he was another interesting viewpoint and had front office ties and stuff like that. So you take him away, but they're, Schmitz and Givony are at ESPN now. They're both in Portland. Schmitz tweeted about Gafford a few times. He was at the OU game and talked about how Daryl Macon was a bucket getter and Gafford was an interesting long-term prospect, and you know, obviously he has a great physique. He went and watched the UConn game to see Gafford again. Givony wrote a wrap-up article Sunday from the tournament, kind of going over how draft prospects did. And one guy that he really mentioned as a breakout performer was a 6'9", I want to say, dude from Oregon who kind of came from off the radar. And that was somebody who wasn't really on a draft radar beforehand who played well. Didn't mention Gafford, and so you know, I think this, it might actually work out to Arkansas's advantage that Gafford was in foul trouble so much. Obviously, when he was out there, he had some really impressive moments. You could see his athleticism, and I think you could kind of see his developing skill set and potential, but he didn't get to play a ton, and it would have been interesting if Arkansas had played Michigan State to see how he would have matched up against, like, Jaren Jackson and those guys. I don't know how much he would have matched up against Miles Bridges, but he didn't really end up with any marquee one-on-one matchups against other NBA talent, you know, even though you had got, you know, Bagley and Bombo were obviously in the other bracket. But I think NBA teams are definitely aware of him. NBA personnel, scouts, there were a lot of scouts there. Actually, three of them were sitting by me during, I think, I think the UConn game, maybe one of the games, and they were talking about Gafford's foul issue. So he's on the radar, and I don't think he's in a first round conversation at this point. Obviously, it's a long season, and you would expect him to keep getting better. Dogan asked about my personal subjective opinions on Arkansas compared to the rankings and the PK80 field and NCAA field. I thought they played well. Obviously, they wanted to go 3-0. That didn't happen. Winning two games was huge. They're always going to win one. They're either going to beat OU in the opener or Portland in the second game. They're playing with house money once they beat OU, because that meant that they didn't have a 300 RPI type Portland team on their resume. So that wasn't something that drags down their strength of schedule, and I think that they're going to end up benefiting from that. This team's got a chance to be really good. Somebody else asked me a question about that too, and I'm going to address that in a second. Hogmoto asked, and I kind of talked about this earlier too, North Carolina's half-court defense just shut us down. They forced us to work in the half-court and slowed the game down. Do you see this team developing a half-court offensive game to deal with this when we play Florida, South Carolina, A&M, etc.? Yeah, I mean, ideally, they cut harder, they screen better, and work in unison. And it's not like they just did the motion stuff against North Carolina. They tried to run other stuff. They tried to run floppy. They tried to do other things, whether it be staggered ball screens, and it wasn't like they were just freelancing out there. They ran some sets, and those didn't really work either. I just think they kind of got thrown off, and when shots started not falling, that has an effect on how they play. But ideally, they want to do what, you know, most smart teams, I feel like, want to do in basketball, and that's push the pace. And the way you do that is you get stops, you rebound the ball on the defensive glass, and you get out and run. And when they can do that, they've shown that they can really, really be explosive offensively, and I think that's the key moving forward. You would like to see them work better off of each other in the half court, and some of the shots, you're not going to make every shot every game. You're going to have bad shooting games. That was partly a bad shooting game, and partly, I think, a process issue. They just didn't work as well in the half court. Give North Carolina some credit on that, but I think part of that blame was on Arkansas as well. He asked, "Will Baylen Jones seem to be the guys to step up to help Beard handle the press, making Barford seem to shy away from that? If Beard gets injured or in foul trouble, who will handle the press for us?" Barford brought the ball up court a few times. Macon will do it every now and then, not only in Portland but in their other games. I don't think either of those guys shy away from it. I think that's something that Beard likes to do, likes to have the ball in his hand. But I don't think either of them will have an issue if Beard isn't out there. Got two more questions. This one, at BBeck41 asked, "No, seriously, how good is this team? Power rank the SEC right now." I saved this for the end because I know I'm going to probably upset people. He said 1-2 Florida or A&M, and then Hogs number 3. I don't think so right now. Florida's got to be number 1, I think. They're up 18-4 on Duke. Obviously, they ended up losing that game late, but played a heck of a game. A really impressive performance. I absolutely love Mike White. I think he's a great coach. He runs that spread offense, the spread motion offense that Brad Underwood, formerly at OSU, now at Illinois, runs. It's just really hard to guard a continuity offense that incorporates a lot of moving pieces. You can run ball screens out of it, and it's just really, really tough to guard. And I thought it was interesting that they decided essentially, like, okay, you've got Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter. Well, Igor is great. We spread the floor out. We're going to put Igor on Bagley. And obviously Bagley, I think, had, 35? I mean, he's a monster. He's probably going to be the number one pick in the draft. But I think that, Florida, it worked well enough for Florida to be in a position where they probably should have won the game. I'm just going to go ahead and take my L for picking Florida fourth in the preseason poll, because they're clearly better. And I definitely underestimated how much of a difference Jalen Hudson and Igor, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but Igor Kolachev, we're going to make. I mean, God, Hudson looks incredible. He was somebody that Arkansas recruited and went after a few years back and didn't get, went to Virginia Tech, didn't jive with Buzz Williams there really, and so he ended up, you know, going, transferring to Florida, sitting out a year, and he was somebody who definitely, he helped himself on NBA draft radars. He played great, hit a ton of big shots. Obviously, the end of the game didn't go as well as, you know, obviously he didn't play well at the end of the Duke game, and I'm sure he wished he could have had those last 2 minutes or so back, but he had a great weekend. Kolachev, he's a matchup problem, especially when they play him at the four, and they're doing that a lot with Kavarius Hayes and Keith Stone, one of those guys at the five, and really spreading people out, using those two in the high post, and the other four just spreading the court. Man, I really like how they look. Chris Chioza, he's such a great lead guard. He's so fast. Obviously, Casey Hill did a great job for them last year. Chioza hit the big shot in the tournament, and I think that he's really, really morphed into probably a better floor general point guard than I thought he was going to be. Maybe that was stupid on my part, but I thought he was great. Kayvon Allen, you know, I get some Arkansas fans, probably a lot of Arkansas fans don't like him, but I covered him in high school, and man, he's just so, he's so cold. His offensive game is just really fun to watch, and he's so quiet out there. He doesn't really ever say anything, kind of that silent assassin type player. And I really, really like Florida. A&M's played great so far. They beat West Virginia by 23, beat USC by 16. And they didn't have J.J. Caldwell for that first game. I think he missed, what, the first four or five games because he got a DWI over the summer or in the spring. Point guard who really changes a lot of stuff for them when he's out there because he can get into the lane and kick to either shooters or set up their two bigs. They've got the best – got the best front court in the conference. Tyler Davis, Robert Williams. Robert Williams playing great so far. They look, you know, really, really good. And it's not a surprise that Robert Williams is playing as good as he is. But DJ Hogue and Admond Gilder are maybe playing better than a lot of people thought they would. Hogue has been fantastic so far. A&M looks really good. I picked them second behind Kentucky. And I think that they would probably get my number two spot now. Number three, here's the thing. I think Florida is a clear-cut one for me right now. If you wanted to argue between two and five, I think you could do that. Three, I'll go Bama. They lost by five to Minnesota, and that was such a weird game because their bench got ejected, and then they had somebody foul out. Somebody else got hurt, so they only played with three dudes. Colin Sexton had 40. I just think they're such a different team than they were last year, and I kind of wonder if Arkansas fans – I had someone ask why I thought they were better than Arkansas. And I think, Arkansas killed them last year, and it was such a demonstrative performance. It was one of the better games Arkansas played. I think maybe that sticks in people's mind a little bit. But they're a completely different team. Colin Sexton is just such a dynamic player. And John Petty, 6'7", guy who can shoot. He's super athletic. Those two give them a completely different look, change their backcourt. And you add in Dante Hall is a freak. He's a great rim protector. He's somebody who's definitely on draft radars. Super long, and their defense was so good last year. They were number 10 in the country and tops in the SEC. They're number 22, I think, to this point this season. So they haven't, even though you incorporate these scoring freshmen, they haven't really dropped off that much. And I'm really, really impressed with them. Kentucky, I still think you got to put Kentucky over Arkansas. You look at Kentucky's one loss was to, obviously they had some issues against other teams and haven't been as impressive in a lot of games, but they hung with Kansas. They made that game really ugly. They lost by four. They're just so long. They're so athletic. They definitely have flaws. I'm not trying to say that they don't, but they've got the kind of players that are going to make it hellacious to score on them. They're number 9 in the country in defense. I just think you look at their big test, Kansas. They lose by by four. And you look at Arkansas as they lose by 19 to North Carolina. Obviously, that game was closer, but Kentucky's got all these freshmen who they're gonna get better. They've got their floor, I feel like, is really high because defensively they're gonna be so good, and their defense is gonna allow them to stay in games and always, you know, for the most part, they're gonna have a chance to win. Offensively, they don't have a point guard really. They are only taking 12 threes a game. That's, you know, they're not shooting terrible, but they're not shooting threes really, period. So that's a issue, I think, moving forward, and I don't really see any way that changes really. Getting Jared Vanderbilt back will help. I think you got to go Kentucky 4, though, and Arkansas 5. You know, obviously they weren't great against North Carolina, but Daryl Macon, Jalen Barford, they are elite players. They have been about as good as you could have asked for to this point. Barford's almost averaging 21. Megan's averaging 16. They're both shooting like 50% from three. That's not going to continue. But I think they've for the most part done a good job distributing and setting guys up, being creators. They've been great. And when you have good senior guards, you're going to have a chance to be really good and beat some teams. If they can get Gafford to continue to come along and stay on the court, if C.J. Jones and Darius Hall can continue to progress, then you know, I think that they got the potential to be one of those top three or so teams. I mean, they can compete with anybody, I think, in the conference. Florida's going to be tough, but I think that they've got a really good chance to be one of those teams that gets better throughout the course of the season. And like I said, Kentucky's floor was high because of their defense. Arkansas's floor is high because of their senior guards. You know, I think those are clearly the top five teams. Georgia's been better than I think a lot of people, myself included, expected. They beat St. Mary's. St. Mary's was ranked. Missouri, obviously losing Porter, that was huge. They almost beat West Virginia, even though they barely beat Emporia State. They still have some talent. It'll be interesting to see how they can adjust on the fly because, man, I mean, obviously they thought they were going to run a lot of stuff through Porter. You take a guy that was going to be as high usage as he is and he put him out of the equation. That's a lot of different stuff that you got to adjust to and adapt to. Tennessee's been surprising. They beat Purdue in overtime, and then they're up 12 at halftime on Villanova, then just got absolutely killed in the second half and ended up losing that game. But you know, they Ken Pomeroy had an article about how they, like, seven or eight players on their team grew 2 inches over the summer and what they listed them as, and obviously that's probably not legit, but they're a good, you know, they were a solid team last year. They played a really tough schedule and kind of had maybe a chance late in February to make a push to the tournament. It didn't happen, but yeah, I mean, they've looked like a team that if the SEC does get seven or eight into the NCAA tournament, they could definitely be one of those teams. I really like Mississippi State. They haven't played anybody, though, like, just loading up on these terrible teams, which might come back to bite them. Their strength of schedule is probably not going to be that great. I actually don't know who they play the rest of the non-conference, but they've played, like, nobody so far. But I do like their backcourt. LSU beat Michigan. Not great. They got hammered by somebody, though, the other day. Vanderbilt went to overtime against USC. The SEC's just, you know, top to bottom been a lot better than I think. You know, I thought it was going to be strong, but it's even exceeded the expectations I had for it. But as far as where I put Arkansas on that, I think they're clearly one of the five best teams. I think Florida is probably my clear cut number one, but you know, you could make the argument for Arkansas to be as high as two, I think. The North Carolina game, maybe a little bit of a black eye, but I really do think that this team has the potential to be good. And last one, because I am at, I'm at an hour, 4 minutes, just rambling. Mr. Steve, at Mr. Steve Music, asked, Arkansas will be the best team in the SEC at the end of the year if. And so I got this, and I kind of started thinking, and I typed a few things. I was going to say wrote a few things down, but I typed them down, actually. You know, I think Gafford staying out of foul trouble, learning how to stay out of foul trouble, and continuing to develop, and I think that's going to happen. I mean, they're going to get to a point where he can play 25 minutes a game and it not be a huge issue. He's gonna be a monster. I mean, he's already, you can see just these moments where, like, my goodness, he's so physically gifted, and I think he's got so much to build on, and he's 6 games into his college career. He's gonna keep getting better. And I think, Mike has shown that if he can keep himself out on the court, he's gonna get to play. If Adriel Bailey keeps playing the way that he has to this point, he's been great. I mean, he has been really, really good. He can switch on the guards. He can protect the rim. He's been aggressive offensively, and really finished well around the basket. He's rebounded reasonably well. That starting lineup has just blitzed people for the most part. And even North Carolina, they outscored North Carolina with their starters. So I've been really impressed with him. As Dustin continues to get into the flow, that'll help. You would think, fifth year guy, he's going to get better. They need him to get better. They need him to be a little bit more decisive. If Jalen and Darryl play at this level, this team could be really good. They need Anton Beard to be more consistent, because OU Anton Beard was a lot better than North Carolina Anton Beard. OU Anton Beard got into the lane. He knew when to attack and get his own. He was able to kick out to shooters or wrap it around and drop it off to bigs. North Carolina Anton Beard, I thought, kind of looked like North Little Rock Anton Beard, and North Little Rock Anton Beard ISO'd and took people off the dribble, and he could do that because he was just so much better than everybody, obviously, at that level. Against North Carolina, it was a different thing, and he didn't play well, and I thought he stopped the ball and really kind of, he was one of the main reasons that they sort of, he was one of the main guys that kind of kept them from being in a flow offensively. Tried to do too much. But I talked about this earlier. The other thing, CJ and Darius, if CJ can play 20 minutes a game and shoot high 30s on like 5 threes a game and just be average defensively. I don't think he has been average to this point. I think he's been probably below average on the defensive end. He makes a lot of mistakes still, whether it be rotations or just getting beat off the dribble. He like Gafford, is another guy that as they get older, getting stronger is going to be a big deal. But this team has a lot of pieces. If Darius Hall can get to a point where, you like the aggressiveness right now and he can really impact the game defensively, he's got to learn it to rotate better. But on the ball, he's really good. They've got 9 solid players, I feel like, and 3 of those senior guards who have played a bunch. Their top four guys are really good. If you look at Barford, Beard, Macon, and Gafford. So identifying who that fifth guy is to play with that group, whether that's CJ playing the four, which I hadn't talked about, but that's something that might be interesting moving forward. I don't know how feasible that is defensively, but finding that fifth guy and kind of identifying who that is, that'll be a big deal going forward. And obviously, they got a big slate coming up this week. I've rambled on long enough, and so once they go ahead and play Houston Saturday, then it sets up for maybe a week where they kind of really get into the rankings and jump on up and make themselves a team that's in the top 20 that's starting to get more national attention. They got a lot of national attention this week with how well they played in Portland, and I think that they can build on that going forward. So this week it was a solo one. If this is your first time listening, normally I've got a guest. It didn't work out that way this week just because of being on the trip and taking a bunch of questions, and kind of I just now got back into Fayetteville. So we'll probably have a guest next week. We'll talk about the Houston game and preview what should be a really interesting week with Colorado State and Minnesota coming to Fayetteville. So I'll check in with you guys next week. But until then, thanks for listening.